If you ache for truth, goodness, and beauty, if you're hungry for a Christianity with substance and strength, if you long for a faith that's big and bold and biblical and all about Jesus Christ, if you're inspired by the idea of one church that has spanned 20 centuries, 24 time zones, and two hemispheres, enfolding every race, nation, and language, then you're considering Catholicism. Welcome back to Considering Catholicism. And once again, we're going to take some listener questions in this episode. Maybe in 30 or 40% of our episodes are based on questions that you have written in about. And a lot of times we build a whole episode or sometimes even several episodes around those topics. But we also get a lot of very specific questions. And from time to time, I'm just going to take on those specific questions. And so that's what we're going to do again today. But I want to, before I do that, ask you to do me a favor, and that is to rate and review this podcast. We've been growing really rapidly. I think I shared a couple of episodes ago that we've passed now 100,000 total downloads in our first 2 years of existence. We are now running over 10,000 a month and growing, which amounts to a 400% growth just in the last year. I'm so grateful to the Lord for blessing this. Again, as I've shared before, I don't do any marketing. I don't do any social media. I know I'm supposed to. I'm supposed to have a cool Instagram feed and a Twitter feed and spend what would feel like to me half my day posting social media to kind of promote the show. I'm supposed to be doing all kinds of other podcast marketing, and I just don't do anything. This show has grown as it has just because of word of mouth. I just upload the episodes, and somehow, some way, by the Holy Spirit, all of you find it. And the stories that I get from you about the difference it's making in some of your lives are really incredible. But what's interesting, when we look at that growth, where it's coming from, about 70% of our downloads are from the United States, and then other countries make up the balance. But also to look at our platforms. So when we started out, Apple Podcasts, which in a lot of ways is the biggest podcast platform that's out there, was our biggest source of downloads. But it has really declined. 54% of our downloads come from Spotify, and only 34% are coming from Apple, and then the rest are a whole lot of other sources, Amazon, Direct Web, other podcast platforms. But our growth has really come through Spotify. So those of you who are listening on Spotify, 54% of you or whatever, please rate it on Spotify. I'm convinced that one of the reasons we're growing on Spotify is because the more of you that download it on Spotify and then rate it on Spotify, Spotify moves it up in the searches. So if you search for Catholic podcast or Catholicism podcasts, we come up near the top. And for whatever reason, on Apple, our ratings aren't turning into visibility. So if you type Catholic or Catholicism, we come up on Apple a little bit lower in the searches. So please rate it on Spotify or Apple. Really makes a difference as to whether people see it when they type in topics and it comes up. The other thing is reviews. Reviews really help us. Apple has podcast reviews. Spotify doesn't. If you do listen on Apple, then please go and write a review. That also helps us to become more visible. You can also leave a review on our website, consideringcatholicism.com. That really helps us to become more visible and to, again, move up and promote the show. And really, at the end of the day, what we're trying to do is expose more people to what we're talking about so that more people around the world can consider Catholicism. So I really appreciate that. Also, send in your questions, your stories. I get back to all of them. It takes me sometimes a week or two because I'm inundated with messages and email, but I read them all and I will get back to you. If you've got a question, a comment, a story, anything like that, that really helps. And then again, and I hate doing it really, but if you would support this ministry, it makes it possible. The growth that we've had and the ability to continue to produce and produce more and try new things like the deep dive episodes that we're starting to do on Fridays, all of these kinds of things, they take more time and resources than when we first started out. And your one-time or recurring donations make a huge difference. So Anyway, enough of that. Let's get to the questions for today. And the first one is one that I have avoided this topic for 2 years. And I get a lot of questions about it. I get a lot of emails about it, and I just haven't wanted to talk about it on the show. But it is the traditional Latin Mass. I get a lot of people asking, what do you think of the traditional Latin Mass? Do I attend the traditional Latin Mass? Do I think the traditional Latin Mass is better than regular Mass? I'll talk about what that all means in a minute here. And do I recommend that new Catholics or people who are considering Catholicism check out or go to the traditional Latin Mass? The first reason I've stayed away from discussing it is that the TLM, I'm use that abbreviation, traditional Latin Mass, TLM, is that the TLM is this huge controversy in the Catholic Church right now. And it has become something of a sort of badge or banner that a whole lot of other issues get attached to or rally around. Between orthodoxy versus progressivism, in doctrine, in morals, in church politics, in culture, in civil politics, everything else. You all know what I'm talking about. I don't like to use conservative and liberal. I prefer orthodox and generously progressive, which in a lot of ways is a nice way of saying non-orthodox. But these sort of conflicts that are playing out in the church, one of the ways that people can signal their allegiances on all of these issues is whether they are for or against the TLM. Talking about it on Catholic media becomes this lightning rod for all that other stuff. And the mission of this podcast is, and has always been, to unpack all of those issues: doctrine, morals, church politics, church history, culture, et cetera, sort of unpack those issues one by one. But if I either wave the TLM banner or if I reject it, then I sort of lose the ability to dialogue about those issues with people on the other side, because they're just going to say, oh, considering Catholicism, Greg is a TLM guy. I'm not going to listen to him about any other things. Or they're going to say it's a traditional Latin Mass guy, and you get swept up in all of that stuff. And so I felt that from the beginning, our mission was to excite and educate and equip people about all of the range of issues in Catholicism. And I've just felt like speaking out about the TLM would polarize the listening audience. So that's one reason. Our last Pope, Benedict XVI, didn't promote the TLM, but he protected it and he supported those who chose to celebrate it. Our current Pope is very much opposed to the TLM, and he has very vocally criticized those who do support it and made it much more difficult for them to participate in it by limiting the places that it can be celebrated. Now, who knows what position the next pope will take on the TLM? And I've stayed away from papal politics on this podcast. If you want to talk about church politics, papal politics, there are 10,000, 100,000 Catholic bloggers, Catholic podcasters, YouTubers, Catholic social media influencers who post about papal politics every single day, often 4 or 5 times a day on Twitter. And if you want to dive into that world, then go to Twitter or go to YouTube or search for podcasts from the Catholic right or the Catholic left that do that thing 24/7, 365. Pope Francis said this. Yay, Pope Francis. Pope Francis said this. Boo for Pope Francis. Blah, blah, blah. Here's all the inside discussions about what Pope Francis did or didn't say in the last 24 hours. And that's just, again, not the mission or purpose of this podcast. This is for those of you who are considering Catholicism, and I define Catholicism for the show in the broadest possible way as the historic Catholic faith that has spanned 20 centuries, 24 time zones, and 2 hemispheres. All of those disclaimers being said, now let me say this. I, personally, am unashamed of being thoroughly, completely orthodox in matters of doctrine and morals. And my allegiance lies with Catholic tradition. Again, the reason the show starts out by talking about the 20 centuries, etc. So given that I am a very orthodox guy on doctrine and morals, very conservative, very traditionalist, I have a favorable opinion of the traditional Latin Mass, and I am very attracted to it, and I have a great deal of respect for it, but I attend a Novus Ordo parish for a variety of practical and personal reasons. Vocationally, I feel called to belong to worship with, and to work at my geographic parish, which is about 6 minutes from my house. And that is a Novus Ordo parish. And so I try to serve to the best of my ability where the Lord has placed me, and that's at my local parish. You will never hear me criticize the TLM or the TLM movement in the church, but I do believe that the Novus Ordo Mass can be celebrated reverently with a focus on the sacred and respect to Catholic tradition. I do not like Novus Ordo Masses that are not reverent, not sacred, and not steeped in tradition, and I am glad that the lame progressive abuses of the Mass that arose in the 1970s and the 1980s are withering away, and hopefully they won't come back. Okay, there you go. I've kind of opened my trench coat, bad metaphor, and sort of told you where I stand. But for those of you wondering about whether the TLM might be for you, here's some background on all this. The traditional Latin Mass is the liturgy as it was celebrated in the Roman Rite of the Catholic Church before the reforms of the Second Vatican Council, which took place between 1962 and 1965. And it follows the Roman Missal that was put forth by Pope Pius V in 1570 with minor revisions that were made up until 1962. Okay? In 1969, Pope Paul VI introduced a new order of the Mass called in Latin the Novus Ordo Mass, which replaced the TLM, which at that point had been in place with, again, only minor revisions for 400 years. Now, the most obvious, but not the only difference between the two Masses is the language. The traditional Latin Mass is celebrated entirely in Latin except for the homily. So when the priest gives the homily, that's in the vernacular language. And depending on where you are, potentially the scripture readings. So most of the time in the TLM, the scripture reading will be read first in Latin and then repeated in the vernacular language. Now, one of the questions I get from people all the time is, why would anyone want to go to a Latin Mass instead of one in their own language? Isn't Latin a dead language? Who can understand what they're talking about? I can think of at least two reasons for celebrating the Mass in Latin. The first is continuity with the past. So we are praying the same prayers that all the departed saints before us had. And the second reason is uniting us in the present. That means that the Catholic Church, which spans every tribe, tongue, language, and nation, is celebrating the liturgy in one universal language. So whether you're in France or Japan or Africa or South America or Outer Mongolia, you're saying the same prayers in the same language, and it is a sort of uniting of us in the present tense and a unity of us with the saints of the past. So that sense of having that universal language for the liturgy, there's a great deal of appeal to me in that and to a lot of others. But language isn't the only difference between the TLM and the Novus Ordo. The TLM, by its structure and content, emphasizes the sacred and sacrificial aspects of the Mass, what we might call the vertical dimension between us and God. The 1969 Mass emphasizes, in its structure and content, the communal aspects. It stresses less the vertical aspect of the Eucharist and more the horizontal aspect of it as a communal meal. It emphasizes the participation of the lay people. It emphasizes fellowship, etc. That horizontal dimension. Now, to be clear, Christianity, the Catholic Church, involves those two dimensions. There's the vertical dimension with God and the horizontal dimension among us. One way to think about the difference between these two masses, other than the language, is that the TLM puts the stress on that vertical dimension, and the Novus Ordo tends to stress more that horizontal dimension. And this gets played out in the differences in architecture. Here's a perfect example. In the 1970s and 80s, at least in the United States and other parts around the world, they started building Catholic parishes in the round. So the church became circular, and you had the altar, the sanctuary, the platform, with seats sort of all around it, if not 360 around it, maybe 270 degrees around it. That way people could see each other, you know, and the floor is sloped as you go up, almost like a theater. So we could all look at each other and see the priest. And the priest would come out and he would walk around and talk to us all. And there was much more of this sense of we're all together. In my worst moments, I think of the classic cartoon about the Grinch that stole Christmas and the Who's in Whoville, and how they all sing the Who song at the end to each other. And that's an unfair characterization, but a lot of that came out in the 70s and the 80s. The same thing with the music. The music all became vernacularized. In the 70s and 80s, there were a lot of these abuses, different kinds of musical instruments and musical styles that were more like contemporary pop music or folk music. The gestures and the movements of the priest and the people, the aesthetics, everything else. Again, there was this sort of stress of the vertical in the TLM and more of a stress of the horizontal in the Novus Ordo. And again, to be clear, I think that you can celebrate the Novus Ordo Mass and stress the vertical. And I believe that we do that in our parish. I think you can stress the sacred. But there was a tendency, especially in the 70s and 80s and the 90s, for Novus Ordo Masses to become a lot more like contemporary Protestant services, worship services. So why are people attracted to the TLM? A lot of people say that they sort of perceive and feel the sacred and the transcendental in the TLM more than they do in the Novus Ordo. Again, it's that focus on the sacred, on the vertical dimension. Others, though, are repulsed by that because culturally, doctrinally, they love the sort of horizontal part and the whole thing about the vertical dimension and all the ways that that gets played out in the TLM kind of turn them off. I've talked to older baby boomer Catholics who kind of came of age in the 70s and were wrapped up in all, a lot of the cultural movements of the 70s and the early 80s who just are absolutely turned off by that emphasis of the sacred and the transcendent. And of course, those are the things that attract me. But again, I do think that the Novus Ordo Mass can be celebrated emphasizing those things, but it tends to be about tendencies, okay? This is going to be a really gross generalization, but I think that you could say that the TLM puts more emphasis on God, and the Novus Ordo puts more of an emphasis on us. And so if you want the Mass to be all about God, the TLM is attractive. If you want the emphasis to be us, then the Novus Ordo, as it is often practiced in more progressive circles, is going to be more attractive to you. Now, one of the things that's all the talk of the Catholic Church right now is about how young people are flocking to the TLM, while baby boomers in their 70s and their 80s are still clinging to their shrinking 1970s guitar masses. That's a cliche, something of a gross generalization, but there's a lot of truth to it. And I think that there should be some caution. You can do the right thing for the wrong reasons. To the extent that some young people today, some millennials, might see the TLM as a way to rebel against the excesses of the baby boomers. And remember that in the 1970s, the baby boomers themselves were the young people rebelling with their guitars and macrame banners and all of that. There's a tendency for young people always to rebel against the establishment. the millennials are flocking to the TLM today, if they're flocking to it for the right reasons, again, you can do the right thing for the right reasons or the wrong reasons. If they're flocking to it for the right reasons, that's great. But to the extent that it's a way to sort of make a point or to rebel against the excesses of the baby boomers, you got to be careful with that. There can be generational fads, and I would hate to see the millennials glomming onto the smells and bells of the TLM as a sort of fad that in 10 or 20 years will fade away like the guitars and the macrame did for the baby boomers. We should be loyal to and working to build continuity with the past that spans not only generations, but centuries and millennia. We should be loyal to and working to build enduring traditions. We should avoid getting too caught up in generational conflicts over culture and papal politics. Again, you can do the right thing for the wrong reasons. So I am really excited to see the millennials streaming to the TLM masses, as long as it's not just a way to sort of stick it to the baby boomers or to rebel. Because then I think it has no enduring power, and it's going to be really them just repeating the same errors that the baby boomers made when they flocked to all the guitar masses and stuff in the 70s as a way to sort of stick it to their parents. And you just got to be careful of that, okay? Now, if you want to attend a TLM, the truth is that under Pope Francis, it's gotten more difficult because he has issued papal rules, essentially, that have restricted the number of places where it can be held. So in my case, for my wife and I, the nearest TLM to us is 25 miles away. Could we get in the car and drive 25 miles there? We could. Again, I don't feel called to drive past the parish that's just down the road from me another half an hour and ignore my neighbors. I feel called, as I've talked before, about serving in my community. And again, if there was a TLM across the street, might I attend it? I might. But again, if you want to attend one, you've got to look for one. And at least under Pope Francis, who knows what the next pope will do? Maybe we'll see more of them opening up. But if you Google traditional Latin masses near me, all of these directories that pop up, websites that list where they all are, there's a ton of resources online so that you can learn the prayers and the mass responses in Latin. There's YouTubes that help you to do that, and little missal books that you can take with you and follow along what it means in Latin and what it means in English or your language. So again, that's what I'm going to say for today about the traditional Latin Mass. And this just may spark more questions and comments from you. And please send me further questions and comments or your thoughts. I love to read those. And again, this will be a dialogue, but that's kind of where I stand on it. Now, the other question I want to take on today, and it's not a coincidence that it sort of ties into it, it's the issue of priests wearing cassocks. Okay. Cassocks. That's spelled CASSOCKS. And I get questions about this because a lot of people are perplexed why so many younger priests, the generation that is attracted to the traditional Latin Mass, these priests are starting to wear cassocks more often in public and at church. Okay, what's a cassock? The sort of uniform for a Catholic priest is the Roman collar, usually with a black shirt, although apparently in some warm climates, they sometimes in the summer or whatever allow a gray or a light blue shirt. I'm not sure what the particulars of the rules are in those places about that, but you know, 98% of your Catholic priests in the USA and Northern Europe are going to wear the Roman collar with a black shirt. Usually just black pants. Now, there is this other garment that priests have traditionally worn called the cassock. It is a long coat-like garment, okay? Hangs down to like their ankles. And it's got buttons all the way up the front. In fact, the cassock typically includes 33 buttons up the front, symbolizing the 33 years of Jesus Christ's life. In France, some cassocks are double-breasted, and it's known as a soutane. So if you go to France and you see traditional priests walking around in a double-breasted cassock, that's called a soutane. Some really traditional priests wear this traditional Italian cap called a birretta, which is kind of a square cap, depending all on the occasion and the rank of the clergyman. The cassock's origins go back to the ancient Roman tunic, which was a standard item of clothing for many in the Roman Empire. And as Christianity became more institutionalized, the clergy adopted this sort of distinctive form of dress to set them apart from the laity. That way you could look and go, oh, that guy's a priest, you know, because he's dressed in sort of the uniform of the priest. And over the centuries, this sort of long priestly tunic evolved into the design that we know as the cassock. So by the medieval period, the cassock had become a common form of dress for clergy across Europe. Historically, the cassock was not only a symbol of clerical office, but also kind of a practical garment. You could wear it around for daily activities. Think of a priest, especially in the past, rural areas, this, that. It's kind of a long garment, and it could get dirty, and it could be windy, and it could be cold, and it could be this and that, and it was just sort of a long, protective kind of robe or coat that they would wear. And its style and color have varied a little bit by local custom and ecclesiastical rank. For example, the typical priest's cassock is black, which, by the way, symbolizes humility and the giving up of worldly pleasures. But higher ranked clergy will sometimes have cassocks of different colors. So cardinals, under certain circumstances, wear a scarlet cassock. And of course, the Pope wears a white cassock. You've seen that. One other little fun fact is that the cassock isn't a liturgical garment to be worn during the liturgy, the celebration of the Mass. He might wear it underneath, but the priest typically wears the alb and the chasuble and stole or whatever over the cassock or over his clerical dress. But sometime in the 1960s, going into the 70s, after Vatican II, where everything was supposed to open up, the priests were supposed to be more accessible to the lay people and all of that. And that's not saying that's a bad thing. But the cassock sort of fell out of favor because it brought up the past and all that history. And priests wanted to look more contemporary. And so they began to wear slacks and a work shirt with the Roman collar and that sort of thing to fit in a little bit more with the people. You'll still see cassocks in movies and on TV when the filmmakers want to convey the timeless traditions and history of the Catholic Church, or to make a character who's a priest look solemn and otherworldly, they'll dress him in a cassock. Now today, the cassock has become more than just a garment. It's become something of a symbol or a badge or a statement. When a younger priest wears the cassock, he's to some degree making a statement in the context of our contemporary cultural debates that he stands for or supports the historic and orthodox Catholic Church. So why are we talking about cassocks? Well, because I get asked why so many of the younger priests in the United States and Europe are wearing them while the older priests don't. The older priests just wear the normal clerical collar and shirt. And usually the question is asked by older Catholics who ask the question with some alarm, as in, why are all these young priests walking around in cassocks and trying to bring back the past? All of that went away after Vatican II. You know, they look conspicuous. They look different than the older priests. They're trying to make a statement. What kind of statement are they trying to make? And why would they want to go back to all of that yucky traditionalist Catholicism from before Vatican II? That set us free and brought a new springtime to the church. And these young priests are strutting around in their cassocks, sort of passive-aggressively signaling they're going to drag us back to some medieval past or something. And when I hear older Catholics ask that, I think you've sort of just answered your own questions. Some of these cassock-wearing younger priests are making a statement that I stand on and with and for the historic Catholic faith, and I want to reclaim the timeless traditions of it. Some of those priests are saying, we want our priesthoods, our lives, our careers to support that historic orthodoxy. We don't want our priesthoods and careers to reflect the agenda of some of those older priests who came of age in the turmoil of the 1970s and had more progressive agendas. And these younger priests, by wearing their cassocks, some of them are making that statement that says, this is how we want to be perceived, both inside the church and in to the world around us, as traditional Catholic priests. Because there is definitely a generational shift going on in the Catholic Church right now, of more traditionalist millennial priests turning away from the culture and the agendas of the aging baby boomer priests. And from what I can gather, there is a lot of friction amongst the priests about all these issues. Liturgy, doctrine, church structure, ministry style, all of these things. And the cassock has become kind of a badge or banner in that conflict, where the younger priests are clearly trying to signal where they stand on that. And I know for a fact that some of the older priests, because they've shared it with me, are either perplexed by why the younger priests are wearing the cassocks or irritated by it, because they feel like the younger priests are sort of rejecting what their careers and priesthoods have been about. Let me just share a little bit of perspective on generational shifts in ministry. I went to a Protestant seminary in the late 1980s, and when I got ordained, there was a lot of friction between my generation of young pastors with the establishment generation at that time. The guys that were 20, 30 years older than us, who held the senior pastor positions, they held the executive jobs in the denominational hierarchy, they were the chairman of denominational committees that we had to serve on and all of that. They sort of had the power and the positions, and they had their agendas and their priorities. Now, my generation, we were the young guys in our 20s coming out of seminary, and we had different agendas, different priorities, different styles, different things that we wanted to do in the church. We didn't wear cassocks, and the issues were different than they are today. But there was the same sort of generational tension and the same sort of generational shift that was going to go on. Again, we didn't agree with their agendas and their priorities. And at some level, I think we resented them because they held those power positions. They could ordain us, they could hire us, they could fire us, they could reassign us to new churches. And we were sure, absolutely sure, that we could do a better job running the churches than they could. We were sure that their ideas were old and out of date, that they were responsible for everything that we perceived had gone wrong in the churches for the last 20 or 30 years, and they didn't understand that we were smart, and we had smart new ideas and smart new plans, and we were certain that if we were in charge, we could do a better job than they did. And here's the thing. On some points, I think we were right. I mean, I look back at it and I go, yeah, I think our generation was absolutely right on some of those points. There were things that needed to change. And we were eager to get into positions where we could make those changes happen. But there were other points where we were just, if I'm really honest, and I'm getting to this age where I kind of sit and reflect more on my life and my career and my past. But, you know, if I'm honest, when we were 27, 28, 29 years old, on some points we were just young and overeager and cocky and arrogant, which young men can tend to be, right? And now with, again, 35 years of perspective, wow, was it really that long ago? It's hard to believe, but I listen to some of the priests that I know in personal conversations go on about the great cassock debate. Whether they should wear one, don't wear one, make a statement, tell the young kid fresh out of seminary to knock it off with his cassock and his statements and all that. And here's what I think, as if anyone or any of them cared, but it's my podcast, so you get to hear my opinion. I love historical orthodoxy. I love the church of 20 centuries, 24 time zones, two hemispheres. I love the traditional Catholic Church. I love continuity with the 2,000-year traditions of the church. I like celebrating and signaling that the Catholic Church stands for timeless truths and a culture that has endured. And if it were up to me, which it's not, the church would more boldly embrace its history and more boldly proclaim its rich cultural patrimony. So for me, young priests in cassocks, they don't alarm me, they don't offend me. they actually encourage me that maybe, just maybe, the next generation is going to be okay and do a better job being stewards of that 2,000-year patrimony. And maybe the future of Catholicism in the USA and Europe is a little brighter than it is now, because we do have young priests that are willing to go into the middle of the 21st century and bring forth the treasures of the last 20 centuries. And I hope that this cassock wearing is not just a generational fashion statement. I hope it is a real indication that maybe the next generation of priests will lead us to being a stronger, bolder, more confident Catholic Church that offers the best of our millennia of traditions to a world that needs to be reminded of what we've lost. But I remember being that newly ordained pastor, 27, 28 years old, skinny and energetic and overly confident and cocky and arrogant, and kind of enjoying going to denominational meetings and finding subtle little passive-aggressive ways to signal to my older colleagues that I thought they were old and tired and it was time for them to get out of the way and let me and my crew take over. And now that I'm an old guy, I kind of regret and repent of some of those young man passive-aggressive moves and how we handled some of those situations. Look, I'm a layman in the Catholic Church. The interpersonal dynamics between the younger and the older priests at their deanery meetings and how all that plays out with what they wear and how they walk and talk and all of that and how they rub each other the right way or the wrong way interpersonally is none of my business. I just pray that everyone involved on all sides, the young priests in the cassocks, the old priests without their cassocks, the lay people who are on the sidelines, either cheering for one side or the other, I hope that everyone just treats each other with charity and that the generational turnover brings out the best in the church, not the worst. So that's what I have to say about cassocks. So there's another listener questions episode. Keep sending in your questions to consideringcatholicism@gmail.com, and I'll keep answering them, and I'll look forward to meeting you again here in the podcast ether for another episode very soon. God bless.